The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 14th of July, 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And it's a busy one as always on a Friday. Very shortly, I'll introduce to you our Friday panel, but I want you involved in the conversation. We all do, in fact. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Email comments at highlandradio.com, and we want you involved as well. If you're listening outside the 26 counties, 00353, drop the O and away you go. Put the number in your phone. It's going to be a long one still, but anyway. All right, let's say hello and good morning to our guests, and we welcome on to the program now Father John Joe Duffy. Good morning to you, Father. Thank you so much
morning,
for joining
Greg,
us.
Good morning to the listeners.
It's great to have you with us. Eddie Grant, the former president of the Students' Union at the ATU Letterkenny. Hiya, Eddie.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having
good
me
to
on.
Have you on board. Dr. Joe Kelly, historian and teacher. Joe, how are you? My good morning to you is A, politeness, B, to make sure we're all connected and can hear each other. And it's another morning where we've got off to a successful start. There's actually really quite a lot to get through this morning. Yesterday, we were talking about the new Leaving Cert sex education curriculum, which will normalise lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and other LGBTQ plus identities, relationships and families, rather than marginalising them in standalone lessons. The government's curriculum advisors say the approach to be taken with students will be inclusive, underpinned by the principles of equality, human rights and responsibilities. Now, in fairness, that element is just one part of the Leaving Cert curriculum, which deals with issues such as healthy and unhealthy relationships, matters of consent, whether it's given or perceived, and domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. So there's a lot in there, but the papers did pick out some of the stuff as it relates to the normalising of LGBTQ plus identities, relationships and families. Mixed bag coming back from our audience during the week. But a brief one on this one from you, Dr. Joe Kelly. What's your take on it? Is this worthwhile? Is it useful? It is still out for consultation, so parents and guardians are at this point can have their say still.
Well, firstly, what's it saying about our sex ed for the last 20 years? That's the first thing. So we've been totally acting as ignoramuses for the last 20 years, and all of a sudden, with the new wokeism of transgenderism and everything else, you know, we'll stick that in now and tell us that we were behind the curve for the last 20 years. It's no longer good enough and for parents now to think that when they drop off their kids at school and pick them up, that's the only engagement they have to have with their children's education. Parents need to become aware of what's being taught. And the issue I have is the content of what's being taught, and more importantly, who's doing the teaching. What agenda are they pushing? I have no problems talking about transgenderism, LGBT, whatever it is you need to talk about. But is there an agenda being pushed with that? And I'll give you an example. If you look at any time, Greg, you ever hear, or your listeners ever hear, a politician ever again say, you know, it's going by international best practices, a red flag. Who decides what's international best practices? So when it comes to sex ed, international best practices, they refer often to the World Health Organization Sex Edge Program, which in a small booklet mentions abortion 68 times. Now, that's not an agenda. I have no problems with children being told about abortion and what happens, but it's just the level and the agenda, that the top-heavy infiltration of content and ideologies into that. And this is where the problem is. And
Can I just ask a question? But you talk about ideologies there, right? We had a referendum on abortion here. The public decided. Now, obviously, subsequent to that, that might be changed and further widened, and that's another debate for another day. There are also people who identify as trans and different identities, non-binary and what have you, including discussing them, having a conversation with people in their late teens. How is that wokeness, or how is that an ideology, or how is that an agenda? These people exist. They're not trying to convince young people that they should become They're simply saying that out in the world, these people exist. And here's an understanding of you, I mean, I presume you don't deny they exist.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the fundamental for me as a Christian is, you know, every human being is made in the image of likeness of God. No matter what, we treat everybody with respect, full stop. And that's across everything. So, I mean, that's a given. But my point is this, Greg, and maybe this is an unusual station to be having this conversation, but you had a woman, a very brave, a simple woman on your radio show a few days ago talking about sex ed and the concern she had. And she was just a mother expressing her belief, her ideology as a parent. And I'm sure she was speaking for a lot of parents. She wasn't shut up. And she wasn't shut down. You gave her an opportunity to say what she needed to say. And she reflected of what many parents would be thinking. But that woman wouldn't be given that platform on national broadcasting. She wouldn't be allowed to air her views, her Christian views.
Well, that's wrong. My issue. Well, that's wrong.
But Greg, this is the issue. It's the agenda that's behind it. As I said, I have no problems with content and with delivery, providing it is balanced. And I just question the balance of that. That's maybe the point I come
Right, the balance is, and I'll put the same point to her as I did to you. The balance is, Joe, that you can walk around Ireland, you can walk around holding hands with your partner, you can walk into any business, any shop. You will never face any grief. No one will ever question you about your colour. No one will ever question you about your gender. You know, you will just be able to operate. All the laws of the land are laid out, as complicated as it can be, to be perfectly simple for you. You aren't oppressed. You aren't marginalised. You have, as a white straight male, a pretty decent run of things. This is about recognising that there are other people that don't have those experiences in this country.
I disagree with you. I don't think I'm treated equally. As a parent, the challenges I face as a parent in Irish society, I would argue in many cases, anti-family. I have children. I have to pay electricity. I have to pay for X, Y, and Z. I don't see the society being positive towards family and towards children. If we're going to have this conversation, let's have a fair and balanced conversation about everything. And as regards males and sexuality, who are the most people in jail? Men. Who are the most people that commit suicide? Men. Who are the most people homeless? Men. You know, let's have the conversation. And I have no problems. I don't want anybody discriminated against. And I would stand up for those people, be it in any sense. Any human being deserves dignity, full stop. And nobody has a right to infringe upon that dignity. But that dignity is not just for a few. It is for everybody.
All right.
Well, the problem, Greg, is it's only been talked about the few. It must be talked about everyone. Everybody must be part of this conversation. Everybody must be treated equally.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean most crimes committed by men.
Absolutely. You know. That is true. And again, maybe if you look at educational attainment, most men are on the lower rungs of education. Most men are in the most rungs of society. I mean, look at the balance.
Do you really believe that, Joe? Everything in this, every controversy almost in this country, for the last God knows how long, it's women that are impacted by it.
Oh, absolutely. You women know. Suffer from domestic violence. Women suffer from, when there's a separation financially, they go into poverty right away. There's no doubt about all those things. But the point...
Then as soon as women try and get some control, like say, for instance, in the interests of... Now, I hope listeners understand when I use language, I'm using it as counterpoints like abortion being healthcare, for an example. Yeah. Right. As soon as there's any inroads made in that, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, you can't do that. You know, it's you can't do it for this reason or for that reason. But anyway, I'll come back to you. That's not a point of view I'm putting here. Having a conversation. Edward Grant, have you a counter view or similar view to Dr. Kelly? He thinks, I mean, he's sitting there in his bedroom. He's sitting there in his front room, scared stiff as a. White straight male. I feel sorry for him. Are you all right, Joe? Do we need to send someone round? You're so oppressed. Come here. Go on, Edward. Go on, Edward.
I have to say, myself and like the rest of the union team take this as a very positive step forward. When we come into the third level environment, which is what we're trying to prepare students for in second level, these students entering their leaving cert, they're doing so to be prepared for entering into the big bad world. A good cohort, and then we'll move forward to third level. We have mandatory consent training. We have mandatory training to try and bring people up to speed. And I think you can see last year, some of the events that happened during my time as presidency, there was gender-based violence happening. There was students being attacked because of the perceived gender, because of the company they choose to keep. And I think it's important that we arm our young people with the proper knowledge to be able to tackle that there whenever they get into the big bad world, whenever they start that process of entering.
Is it proportionate, though? You talk of cases of people and their experiences. Is it proportionate response to have these types of conversations and this type of information given to an entire population of 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds?
Yeah, as far as I know, the proposed changes are coming into the final 2 years, so it's going to be targeting mainly the 16, 18-year-olds. And from my understanding, there still is an option for parents to pull out, same with any class, but then to pull their child out if they don't feel that that there is going to be more appropriate for them. So there still is that option there. I think for me, coming especially so close from my own experience through second-level education, my only fear would be, because it is a non-exam class, it might be taken too lightly. And these are very serious subject matters that we're talking about. I think there needs to be some kind of learner-based assessment there just to ensure that the information being given is being taken correctly and to make sure that the teaching and learning side of that there is up to standard, because I would hate to see it just divulge into more colloquial or more of a DOS class, I think, as they're kind of...
Yeah, because there are serious issues in terms of, which also is a significant part of this change to the curriculum, healthy and unhealthy relationships. What's the difference? Consent, domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. We heard from the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre that violence now is becoming increasingly more a factor in sex crimes. And the head of that is convinced that this is because people are getting their education from pornography. So there has to be some level of education around this here somewhere, because the problems start to particularly manifest themselves, but not exclusively, in third level.
It's something we try and target in third level, definitely. We've been running through, as NUIG came out with a training first, was active consent, and now we're starting to roll out active bystander training. The issue with it is, because third level's core education structure is a little bit more self-centered on learning, and it's not as structured as you would have in second level, it's very hard to target the exact audience that needs to be targeted for these kind of mandatory classes, because they're not pushed in and not put into the mainstream. So I would take this as a very positive change.
Father John Joe Duffy, good morning to you again. What's your view on this?
Good morning, Greg. I have to say that facts are very important, and the fact-based education is very important, as long as it is not ideologically driven or agenda-driven by some, that it's very much a fact-based education. I had a very excellent fact-based sex education in the Rosses Community School in Dunloe when I went to school, and we also learned the facts around abortion at a time when abortion was very far from being introduced in this country. Respect is important. What I see is that there is a huge need to put necessary resources in place to help young people who are struggling. And that is the big elephant in the room, that there is not enough resource and not enough help put in place for young people who are struggling, particularly young people who are struggling with gender identity at this time and with the sexual identity and so on, that help and resource needs to be put in place. And we must realise too that the frontal lobe to the brain, I'm not too much up on the brain, but I believe, having gone through trauma training recently, that is not developed until we are 26 years of age, and young people's minds will change much up until they are 26 years of age, and we do not have the full capacity for making very serious decisions about our lives until we are 26 is what I was told recently in training, but that's open for discussion. But the respect is necessary right across the board, and anything that will take away violence against anyone, anything like that, is to be very much welcomed as well, because everyone should be treated with care and reach out to help. And again, it is a choice for parents. Parents are the primary educators until someone is 18 years of age. And I think that there should be opt-outs for parents who do not wish to have their children involved in the present education, but that there should be a system of sex education put in place for all children, be that the parents doing it, be that it done in the schools, or whatever the case may be.
Did you want to come back on that, Edward, Eddie, sorry, just before I ask a further question of Father John Joe?
Yeah, it's something that I heard both of my co-partners here on the radio that I mentioned, is the idea that there's not to be an agenda behind it. And I think I'd like more information about what agenda they don't want, because every action has an agenda. And as far as I'm concerned, the agenda behind this is to protect our young people.
Yeah, but can I suggest, and I'll respond to that, but in a further question to Father John Joe. The thing that's slightly different about this than most other things that I can kind of think of off the top of my head is that we have an approach that's been decided for educating young people, but yet in society we really haven't settled it all, if you know what I mean. So there are very, very different views out in the world. Now, I'm not talking about the very extreme views. I'm on about people that just haven't got their head around what is possible, what isn't possible, what they might do if a situation arose in their family. Yet we seem to have a very decided and specific approach within the schools. And Father John, so I think that's wherein an awful lot of the problems arise, because parents and guardians haven't got their head around certain issues like multiple genders and someone being born one gender and then living their lives as another, yet is being taught as a matter of sort of fact in the schools. And I think this is where we have a difficulty, and I can't really think of another example of this. It's like if you believed the world was flat and you believed it with all your soul, but your children were being taught it was round. It's kind of, that's the closest I can come to some sort of an example, which I think is throwing up all of this debate and confusion to some extent.
Yeah, Greg, you hit the nail very, very much on the head there. And I agree with you. And we're at very early stages in all of this area. And I think we need to take things very slowly and very carefully. And it's very important. And again, going back, I think that respect is so vitally important, and to nurture young people and to help them through these difficult situations that they are being faced with. And you look now at programs on different types of programs, and programs are changing where you have ideologies very much part of programs, as it has always been, as Edward mentioned, it's a very confusing world, I believe, for adults and for young people at the moment. And change does lead is very confusing for people, and this area is particularly confusing for a lot of people. And I'm not as qualified to speak on it as I'm not sure about Edward. I don't know Edward as well, but I know Joe Kelly is a parent and is a teacher, and you're a parent, Greg, and I think you have a lot more experience in this matter.
I think you probably have had better conversations that perhaps would be more enlightening than might have if someone is seeking counsel or something. But anyway,
well, if someone comes to me seeking counseling around this area, I'm always aware that I have two ears and one mouth,
and you know the ratio,
to listen and to put people in the right to help signpost people. Right. And that's, I believe, very much part of what I do.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Joe Kelly, but I'm conscious that Edward didn't. I took him in, but we didn't get quite as much time. Edward, and I mean this with respect, and I can kind of say this because I'm probably in the target group I'm about to reference here. Is there a generational issue here? Do you think if we had like a load of 15, 16, and 17 year olds listening now and pooled them, they'd say, these guys don't know what they're on about here. Is, you know, my friend is this and I'm that, and we don't judge each other. We all hang around together. This is the way life is. And let's face it, it's their world. You know, we won't be here for very much longer in the wider scale of things. Do we fully understand? I mean, it's like the three of us sitting here, four of us sitting here talking about TikTok if we've never opened the app.
Yeah, I do think there definitely is a generational divide, and I think that's true with any situation, really. In my experience, young people tend to be as confused as adults when it comes to these sort of situations, although they tend to be a little bit more open and understanding of the fact that maybe they don't have the full picture, they're not completely understanding of the world. I think it's important to remember there, because I know the comments made there about the science being unsure and that there, but the first gender realignment surgery was done in 1931. It was done just after World War II. It was a person born in the 1800s. So it's the concepts have been there for an awful long time, and it's just now we're trying to push them more into the mainstream. And I think it's important that the children receive this education so that they can make their own minds up about the subjects when it's their turn to take over.
Yeah, but at the same time too, there is that feeling, Edward, that they're not making their minds up. They are going through that period of their life where you're seeking something, you're seeking an identity, you're seeking your place in the world. You know that, and then you know you're placed with this menu of options, and you could go, right, well, you know, that's who I am. Like the current, like we need more time, we need more analysis. Do we 10, 15 years down the road to see people who are 15 and 16 now? How are they? Have we done the right thing? Are we making sure that we are guiding them correctly?
The best decision to be made there, as you said, these are people that are seeking out ideologies, the people that are trying to decide what their place is in the world and who they're going to be when they get there. And I think for them to make that decision, it's most important for them to be informed of the options they have and where they will lead. For us to sit there and decide, well, I don't think it's appropriate for us to give this knowledge to a child who will eventually receive it, whether or not we as adults or just as parents decide that it is appropriate for them. It's going to be a decision they make, and it's knowledge that they're going to gain regardless. And I think it'd be better for it to be given in a setting where it's controlled, in a setting where the information is coming directly from experts who have more knowledge in this area than any of us sitting here.
All right, Edward, if you could move closer to your router, it would be absolutely superb, because you've got important views and I want to hear what they have to say. If that's doable, if not, we can work our way through it. But Dr. Kelly, finally, before we take a break and move on, like we... You know, it's been referenced about parents and our responsibilities, and I actually think it's all of society. I think Father John Joe's role in all of this is as important as ours, because, you know, but we it's our responsibility to make sure we're doing the right thing right now. That's my point. And we're not settled on if this is the right thing. And I think this is why conversations like this are useful, but we are presuming that this is the right thing to do, but it may well be. But how can parents be assured that it's not, that we're not going, that creating the issues as we try and make sure that we're looking after everybody at the same time? If that makes sense, as convoluted as that ramble was.
No, I get the point. Look, I have children. I'm a parent, and I want to make their bodies physically as best I can. So I feed them properly. I exercise them properly. I invest in them to make them physically the best human beings. That's a duty I have as a parent. Likewise, I need to put into their mind what's healthy. And I am concerned that if I put into my child's, into their mind, in the same way I would put bad food into their body, what effect does that have on them? And this is, goes back to the science. The science in a lot of this new generational ethos is very unproven. And if you look at, for example, the whole basis of transgenderism goes back to John Money in 1955, who I argue is a very sinister and amoral man. Two children committed suicide because of his experimentation. And this is considered international best practice. And I advise parents, go on and Google John Money and you'll understand what's behind this agenda. I mean, and so I have to be careful that I protect my child's inner being, what goes into their head. I have a duty as a parent in the same way I care for their food. And it's not about...
Yeah, but this agenda thing that you keep mentioning, though, like language is so important. What do you mean by agenda? Do you think there's a group of people actively trying to turn people who are born as male into women, or vice versa? I mean, what might the agenda be there? Do you know what I mean? These are people who, from a very early age, they don't connect with their physical body. Now, some might go down the route of very few, but some might go down the route of gender realignment. Some might take some hormones, but many don't. Many just identify and walk around, not with their birth assigned. They're not being driven to do. That's their feeling. That's the want. So as soon as then you start talking about agendas, Joe, honestly, I kind of get lost a little bit because I'm like, well, who are you talking about? What are we talking about here?
Well, the point I'm trying to make maybe is this, that I think we all agree, Eddie and Father John, Joe, myself, look, respect is terribly important for every human being, full stop. But the problem is it's not about respect. It's been loaded in certain elements that there are certain views that are getting priority over other views and there's no balance. An example, I go back to that woman was on your radio station.
Jane,
back
yep.
That would not happen on national media. She would not. She'd be made shut up and she would have been made closed down. But in fact, you give her an opportunity. That's what I'm on about, agenda, where there is a balance, where people
right,
get a
okay.
chance, yeah. They're allowed to air their concerns.
I get you. I do understand now. I do understand exactly what you mean. But Edward, do you believe, or Eddie, do you believe there's an agenda to shut down debates? That in other words, if you push back a little bit, you're described as this, that, or the other. I mean, we do have to have open debates, and I don't think in anything in this world we know all the answers, and we'll only get to what is genuinely right for young people is through respectful conversation.
I think that the idea that there is an open debate comes from two sectors, and that's in my personal experience. One is either when somebody expects a person who identifies as transgender or identifies as gay to have explanations as to why. And it's not up to that person to have to debate their own existence. The other side of it is, it's important to remember that whenever we come into conversations like this, there is a standard that's already set. And to be fair to everyone, the panelists today, it's been adhered to. It's the idea of common respect, mutual human understanding. And I think sometimes the debate can teeter on the edge of, does this person actually exist? Where we can see they do.
Yeah. Of course, and I don't believe that there was any utterance in that regard here, but we also have to make sure that that person, are we in supporting them without questioning or any alternative, are we actually making sure that we're doing the right thing in, do you get what I'm saying? But
I understand what you mean, and I think I'm just going to go back to something that Joe said there a second ago, the idea that he's putting things into his children's mouth to try and make them healthy. He's giving them food, he's giving them water. Where you got the idea of what's healthy and what's bad came from the experts, came from the scientific community, came from years of research and study, and it's the same scientific community that taught you which food is good and which food is bad.
I'm not sure, though, the community's settled on this issue, though. But Eddie, but I do take your point there. Caller says Joe makes a good point on cherry picking the oppressed. For instance, when Joe brought up abortion, Greg said the majority decided in the referendum, but the unborn child didn't get a vote. Joe's speaking for them. Listen, I mean, this comes up now and again, but we had a referendum in a democracy and the majority voted in a certain way. Simply referencing that is not taking one side of the argument or not. And clearly, obviously, unborn children are never going to have an opportunity to vote in such. And I presume those who were pro-life were advocating on their behalf. Good morning, Greg. Most people in Ireland in prison are men. You said that's because men do most crimes, yet most crimes in America are committed by people of colour, yet you call that racism. Can you see how wrong you are? The doctor is right. Agendas are being pushed. Men can't be women and vice versa, nor can children be animals, which they're identifying as now, and teachers are reinforcing this delusion. They're doing nothing but harm. There's an open conversation actually from within the black community in the United States as to why black men disproportionately represent the population there. It's an open conversation that's had in that country. Right, okay. Thank you very much for your comments. Let me see here. Greg, I think the problem is that if you oppose someone's views or beliefs, then you automatically dismiss them. You don't look at the data or information they put forward, which may be 100% accurate, starting jokingly that someone's terrified sitting in a room, being a single male. If that were reversed, there'd be uproar. But again, there is a certain level of protection and entitlement I have, you know, that would permit me, I think, And also knowing Joe to say something like that. Right. We've a few to get through, so we'll keep it round. Joe, am I right or wrong? I don't know. Anyway, we'll
absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You have to have the beauty again is you have to have a conversation. And you know something? You have the right to express your mind. And at times that will offend people, but that's okay, because by thinking, you're getting your thoughts out. And people then can come back. You know, I think the freedom to speak and even offend someone with what you say gives them the opportunity to come back and say, no, back into your box or whatever else. So if we don't express our thoughts and what's inside our human nature, we never actually get to anywhere that's where we talk about respect and understanding. And that can only be achieved by communicating. And so, Greg,
Sometimes there's a little bit of an irony, and I love everyone texting in, but a lot of the texts I read on this show, we don't screen them. People are texting in saying this, that, and that. Those texts would never be read on other places, because it would be something I disagree with if I were a different presenter, and then I would not read it out. And then, so anyway, Green representatives called for the 12th to be made a public holiday in the Republic. The 12th of July, also known as the 12th, which I reference, marks the victory of Protestant King William of Orange over Catholic King James II in the Battle of the Boyne in 1690, an act that secured a Protestant line of succession for the British Crown in Ireland. Green Party TD Patrick Costello stated that if the Irish state truly aspires to unite all the peoples of this Ireland, then all of those people need to feel represented and included. Now, we spoke to the head of the Orange Order in Donegal, and he was kind of cool on this, for the simple reason is the impact it might have on business rather than, you know, the benefit it might have in terms of representing people and improving relationships. Father John, Joe, any appetite for another public holiday? We all have, I suppose. But do you think this would be a worthwhile exercise, a step in the right direction, or maybe Deputy Costello hasn't read the room?
Honestly, I haven't given it any thought, to be honest. I think there are more important issues at hand, and the more important issues at hand are to. I think there is a need for upholding the peace process that was started and nurturing the peace process, and I think that has fallen by the wayside over the last number of years. And for me, the most important thing is dialogue, and dialogue between all sides. And we saw the rise of violence recently, not too very far from us, when a policeman was shot, and that is totally unacceptable, totally wrong. And we've seen violence at other points, and
I think Father John Joe,
work towards is to nurture that peace process and to make sure that violence doesn't come back. And I believe that the situation in Northern Ireland is in a very difficult situation at this stage. And I wrote a letter to somebody recently, and I noted that we need to be very careful, because I think at the moment the unionists felt abandoned. Those from the unionist tradition, those from the nationalist tradition, felt very much abandoned from Dublin over the last number of years. And I felt it was like a lamp in a shed full of hay. And if somebody tosses it over, it will be very serious. So what I think we need more importantly is not the calls for something that might be populist or otherwise, but for the politicians on all sides to be involved in real dialogue and get the assembly up and running and get things back on track in Northern Ireland. And I think politicians could spend their time far better working on that.
Yeah, there's probably even a bit of naivety in this call, in that you mentioned that reference that case in Omagh, and yet we're still seeing this crack of burning flags and effigies of people. We want to make sure our politicians aren't asleep at the wheel here and sort of just looking at the top of it and what you can do, as you say, to potentially, you know, it seems like a nice... We really need our politicians to say, what's going on in the ground? What are relationships like in various communities? How can we ensure that this is not just intergenerational, that we can start looking towards,
absolutely,
you know, a shared future in real terms, on a housing estate, up a road, in a city?
Absolutely. And the big fear is that communities in various areas have been very much left behind and haven't benefited from the peace, what should have been the benefit of the peace dividend. And now we see the troubles around Brexit, and there is far more complication in the situation now than there was a pre-Brexit. And we need to get real. And I was delighted to see both the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach making very serious efforts to get very real with the peace process in recent times. And I wish them well, and please God that they will keep it very much to the top of their agenda. And please God that they will get the assembly up and running in Northern Ireland, because it's vitally important.
It's critical, isn't
people
it?
People are looked at. Yeah, it's critical because when you have people who are being marginalised, being ignored because of the lack of the institutions, it's very serious. And as you say, you know, it's okay calling for this or calling for that, but let's get real and let's deal with the real issues, the poverty issues that many people in Northern Ireland are facing, and the troubles even within the health service and so on.
Yeah, and Eddie, to you before bringing Dr. Joe, and I'm not talking about you here, I'm talking about people maybe even younger than you. This is a flip of our last conversation, because it's the older generation here that really have the knowledge to know that we really don't want to be going back to where we were once before, because we all lived through it, remember the stories, and it wasn't just in far-flung places, it was within our own communities and what have you. But yes, listen, I don't want to pile on Deputy Costello. It's probably well-intended, but we really need to be talking about getting, you know, political representation properly up and running in the North, and ensuring we don't find ourselves going back to the dark days.
I think thankfully I'm of a generation that really hasn't had much need for education in this aspect. Learned about it superficially, but I haven't really experienced any of the hardships that I think I hear a lot of older generations speak of. As far as what Deputy Costello said, 100% on board with an extra day off work. I mean, I don't think there's a single person that's going to be anti, but you just need to make sure that it isn't just a tokenistic gesture, and that there is a support being put in place to ensure that we have proper multicultural society going forward, and that there isn't any discrimination or non-inclusion.
Some will find it insulting, Dr. Kelly, this proposal, that maybe even suggests that there's not a full understanding of the history and how such a proposal, whilst it might seem all-inclusive, it might just be a step too far for some.
Look, I'll not give you the history lesson today. If it's, in fact, the bishop or the pope in Rome, Innocent the 11th, said mass in celebration for the victory of William of Orange. So just to put it in a historical context. But I think what Father John Joe hit on there about the economics. Look, the reality is, since the Good Friday Agreement, the Belfast Agreement, the Irish economy has expanded by 78%, while in Northern Ireland, the economy has only expanded by 38%. So economically, United Ireland is going to happen. The economics will make it happen. If you look at the census, the under 25 age group in the six counties is far more in the nationalist favour, massively, than in the unionist favour. So look, these are realities, and we have time. And what we need to do is make space. And if the Orange 12th day is about triumphalism and superiority and Protestant ascendancy and all that, we're not having that. But it's up to the Protestant Orange Unionist community to give them, we have to give them the space to tell us what do they want, what do they want to celebrate. And I think we need to give them space. And if they need to march and have their celebration and us partake in celebrating whatever beliefs they have that are respectful at all times. And I think genuinely, you had the Orange Order, the headman on, I think he's very genuine. He's wanting to celebrate his tradition. He wants to celebrate something that's very personal to them. It's a matter of faith. It's a matter of community. It's a matter of music, celebration. And if they need a space for that, then by all means. And we're duty-bound to create that space. And it's only that kind of attitude that's going to allow for an Ireland, a proper Ireland, to emerge. And again, I've said this to you before, Greg, when we are here in Donegal, we have the largest Protestant population on the island of Ireland. And once there used to be a TD who was of the Unionist, Willie Sheldon, and he was later appointed by Shan the Mass as a senator. And, you know, we have Eileen Flynn from our own county as a senator for the travelling community. I think we've been missing opportunities for decades, not having someone from the unionist community appointed to help create that space and articulate their concerns. This is about inclusion.
Is that
this
though
is
it might be seen as someone really to have their input as to what that community might want in a united Ireland? Do you know what I mean? But that would have to come from a point of accepting that is... That's where we're moving. Father John, do you want to come in on that?
No, I agree with Joe. The Senate would be a great opportunity to appoint people from the unionist tradition to get a better understanding of what their desires are. And the late Albert Reynolds appointed Gordon Wilson as a senator who came from the unionist tradition and who is a man of reconciliation. And he was a great asset to have in the Senate. And Joe, I agree fully with Joe on that, and to give the unionist tradition the space to celebrate.
Do you want to wrap up on this in a minute, Dr. Kelly, and then I'll go to a quick break and we'll come back with our last topic?
Again, it's wonderful that we can have this conversation openly on a station like ours, in the sense that it's Donegal straddled 6 miles of us, touch the Free State, the rest of it touches the border, the six counties, and this is the kind of conversations we need, because it's health giving, it's important, and if we are going to move towards United Ireland, we need to work with everybody and bring everybody along, and it's up to everybody to claim that space, and we need to give people space. So with regards to the 12th, we need to give them space. And I hope that they claim that space and they grow into that space, whatever right. that may be.
Okay, back with more from our guests after these. Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions decreased in 2022 compared with the previous year, according to a new report from the EPA. Total emissions were 1.9% lower due to decreases in the residential, agriculture and energy sectors. However, emissions from the transport sector, well, they increased 6%, which is really quite bizarre. And of course, some might say, well, yes, but that was compared to COVID times. Well, it's a very marginal decrease pre-COVID. Well, the government has now used up half of its five-year carbon budget in 2 years. So my rough calculations would suggest that we need to see reductions now of 12% annually over the next 3 years to meet targets. Here's another one that I would love to see a proper open conversation on, and indeed we might facilitate this, you know, where we can talk about some ironies here. There's some reductions in agriculture, but our electricity compute is through the roof, but no one's going to go after the data centres to try and reduce our electricity, where you're going to go after cows that are doing bang bangs, as we say in our house. Obviously, I think we all recognise that we have to bring down our emissions. But in terms of transport, there's never been more electric cars. We're plugging them into the electricity, and yet some of the biggest increases in terms of electricity generation. It's a tough old square to circle, this one, Eddie.
So when it comes to transport, I think in Donegal we're in quite a unique situation. As you know, over the last number of years, we've been trying to campaign along with the local regional groups about trying to get train transport into Donegal. I think some of the decisions that have been made over the last number of years as regard to transport in Ireland just really further push people into having to own a car, having to travel, make those journeys. I think the most sustainable transport option we have available to us is train, and train infrastructure is something I don't think has really seen much improvement around Ireland in the last number of years. I still think it's absolutely ludicrous that the travel from Sligo to Galway by train, you have to go through Dublin.
She didn't realise that yet yourself. Or if you want to travel to Donegal to Dublin by train, you have to go through Belfast. That's if you can get as far as Derry. But I mean, I think we just really need to figure out, all of us, and have an open nationwide conversation about how we can achieve what we feel, or some feel, needs to be achieved. Eddie, we all try and do our bit. You've pointed out the fact that it can be difficult because where are the options? But what I don't understand is we're 39% of our electricity is wind generated. Yet we do have these data centres consuming, you know, 15, 16, 17% of our electricity. And then, of course, the cars on that network as well, putting on pressures. You know, I think our solutions, we're creating more problems than solutions, not as individuals, but in terms of policy.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest changes that are coming down the line, I know when I was involved with working, I worked a little bit with the civils company through the ASB, there was a lot of big battery centres being built. And I think that ability to feed power back to the grid is something that definitely needs to be improved on. Now, again, not 100% well-read in this topic, and it isn't something that I'd be consider myself well-experienced in. But as far as data centers and stuff goes, we move towards a more data-minded time. I think it is something that is needed, so it's not something we can shy away with. And I think not building them in Ireland and have them pushed to some other places that maybe don't have infrastructure is just kind of pushing the problem out of sight, out of mind. Yeah,
but I think in a way you probably hit the nail on the head where policy is trying to bring us away from the sea, away from the land, and to, digital. And that's our place maybe in the EU. Father John Joe, as I say, there's a lot of information in this report, but the nuts and bolts of it is we're making tiny process, 1.9% lower emissions year on year.
Yeah, I was listening to Minister Ryan yesterday evening on the radio as I was driving the car. My big fear about all of this is that we're going to reduce cattle. We're going to put windmills at sea in very valuable fishing grounds. I am all for windmills at sea. I'm all for windmills in the right places, but not where it takes away from others. And we're going to be importing fish as we have started. Fish that's caught off our shores by others. We're going to be importing cattle, our beef rather, from other countries. We're reducing our own herd, and we'll end up importing beef.
And milk.
We'll end up importing fish. We'll end up importing milk. There needs to be sensible solutions, and some of this is none. Some of it lacks common sense, I believe. And I'm all for renewable energy, but renewable energy in the right places, windmills built in the right places, windmills at sea built in the right places, and not to take away from fishing. And we have the best beef, I argue. And yes, there needs to be room for improvement. Of course there is. And I'm all for protecting creation, protecting the environment long before it became a trendy thing. That's important, but not in a sense where, it doesn't make sense to reduce our own herd and then import from Brazil. Yeah. Where is that saving the planet?
Joe Kelly?
Again, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's taken, and you cannot, you're not allowed to speak against the green agenda. You're not allowed to challenge it. There are a lot of scientists, thousands of scientists, that do not agree with this green agenda. And what they won't tell us is, for example, they're talking about if carbon hits 0.4% per particles per million in your air, we're going to have terrible global warming. But what they won't tell you, if it falls below 0.02, which is half of that, then everything in the world dies. That there's a very fine balance.
We have just had the hottest 7 days in the world's history, one after the other, though.
I accept that, and maybe go back to Galileo. The world orbits the sun, and that is not perfect every year or every century. It does wobble a little bit. This is the science that scientists will put towards that. Yeah. Having said that, there is no doubt that human activity has affected the environment. There's no doubt about that, and I'm all for environmental.
I think it's sell us a solution here. Tell us exactly what your plans is.
Here's the elephant in the room. Or, we're busy catching mice and letting the elephants through. If you turned every car in the morning electric, it will only reduce fossil fuel consumption by 10%. And all the emphasis seems to be going on the 10% rather than people standing back saying, what's going on with the 90%?
Okay.
But no, they'll fly into their COP conferences with their big five-course meals on their big private jets, set agendas for us little mice at the bottom to live by, and they'll fly out with their big carbon footprint airplane to wherever they go. This is what's going on. Bill Gates and others setting agendas. What we need in Ireland is extensive farming, not intensive farming, extensive farming.
Joe,
I live in a rural community. We have whins, we have rhododendrons. We need animals, both cattle and sheep, grazing our lands. It is the best environmental balance and biodiversity you can. And instead, what are they trying to do? Take the animals off. The government doesn't believe in the land, doesn't believe in the farmer. And for me, this is a retrospect step for us as a country.
Dr. Joe Kelly, historian and teacher, thanks so much for your time. Lovely to have you on the show as always. Father John Joe, great to see you. Great to hear you. Great to have you on the program. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Have a lovely weekend, will you? And last but not least, Eddie Grant, former president of the Students' Union at ATU Letterkenny. Have a great weekend, Eddie. Thanks for your time. Enjoy
Thanks
your
for
report. All right, take care of yourself. All right, we'll be back with more on the program, including your comments after the news and obituary notices.